When I was 13, I remember being out on the lake with Jimmy Furio, a beautiful man. He was a boat builder, and we were out on Loch Ree one evening. And we were coming back into the bay, and I could see this formation in the sky. And I was wondering, what's this swirling up in the air and back down and around? And the gathering seemed to be getting bigger and bigger. And I says to Jimmy, what's that? What's happening there? Oh, that's only the starlings. They're doing their lovely flight now. He says, that's a murmuration, he says. It's magical. Not one wing touching the other. It's just unbelievable.
The thing about starling murmurations is that they change so fast that you almost haven't got time to take in what they're actually doing. That's one of the things that I think is so exhilarating about it. It's like a magic trick, it's like a conjurer.
Murmuration. A sublime word that describes flocks of starlings wheeling, twisting and turning like acrobats in the cold winter sky. Up to a million birds moving as one organism, swooping and surging in unison. Nature's great ballet in the sky. You know, you won't forget a murmuration of starlings once you see it. My strongest memory is from about 7 or 8 years ago. I was with my mum and my young son, our feet soaking as we clambered into the reedy shores of Loch Ennell. Above us were tens of thousands of starlings moving together. They were forming shapes that you'd see in a lava lamp, except much faster. They fly at about 80 kilometres an hour. Suddenly, they poured down into the reeds right on top of us. They didn't care that we were there. It was as if one of them had shouted, bedtime, and they all moved at once. They swooped low and hard, falling from the sky, cracking into the reeds to settle down for the night. It was kind of like a genie going back into a bottle. And we could feel the air move on our cheeks. And then as they landed into the reeds, packed full of energy, they chatted loudly between themselves. It was a phenomenal experience, almost a little alarming, but completely unforgettable. Murmurations can be so large that they can actually eclipse the light. It's well captured by the Danish word for murmuration, which translates as black sun, describing how a mass of starlings can darken the sky. Enda Maguire has lived all his life beside Loch Ennell in Westmeath.
I remember one in 2009, I was in the farmyard, and it would have been just down the back of the land, and it was, it blocked out the sunset. The sunset would have been behind them, and they completely blocked it out, like at times when they were moving. That was the one that would stick out in my mind. There was another farmer in the yard, and he had never seen one at all. He was from a different area of Westmeath. He was amazed. He didn't know what they were doing even. He couldn't get over it at all. But,
and you're talking about tens of thousands of birds. In one
yeah, place. It is hard. I often ask people how many would they reckon to be in a huge flock. But I don't know how you'd possibly estimate. And then they come in, they could gather in two masses together at the one time. So how much was in each? And then in the morning, if you're up at daybreak, I'd see them coming over. But they'd be in a long, long line. Like, it could be for 10 minutes when they'd be up out of the reeds again in the morning.
At least 10 minutes.
Yeah, heading off to work. Yeah, and they'll be going in two different directions maybe. They definitely are amazing.
It's the sound of winter afternoons. The chattering of starlings gathering in small groups on telephone and electricity wires around the country. The warm-up act before they all join together. From afar, starlings don't actually look like much, kind of like a small blackbird. But up close, they reveal themselves to be a thing of beauty with glossy green iridescent plumage that's covered in small white astral-shaped spots. As the poet Mary Oliver writes, they've got stars in their black feathers. When they're not flying like acrobats in the air, starlings can be heard imitating other birds. In fact, they'll copy any sound that's around them. Someone who has captured this is Cork-based bird researcher Sean Renane, who records birds day and night.
I used to live in North Cork, and in the eaves of my roof there was a starling territory. So there were two birds nesting in there. So I got to know this bird really well. It was very vocal, and I could actually hear it from inside the house. And it was really interesting because I could hear lots of different species within the song. So I soon began to learn that this bird was actually imitating everything that was in the surrounding area. So it was like a sponge, essentially. So what it was singing was a reflection of what was in the fields, in the hedgerows, in the tree lines all around us. I actually put out my recorder under the roof, and I recorded both at nighttime, and I also captured this bird singing early in the morning. So the first example is a female fox. So this is the actual fox itself rather than the imitation. This is a call that a female gives kind of late winter time to advertise the fact that it's single and ready to mingle. So next is the actual imitation by the starling.
You're getting great numbers now, actually, yeah.
So they're all appearing now. They're like little ants in the sky, aren't they?
They are, and they're coming, all coming from due west. Look at this, a big ropes and ropes of them.
How many are there?
3,000-4,000, maybe. It's just now.
Vincent Sheridan is an artist and printmaker who's watched Murmurations for over three decades. I met him in Lilliput on the southern shores of Loch Ennell.
The whole image, I think, was beautifully described by the late Brendan Kennelly in a poem about his father. You know, I see my father coming in, I see my father going, like a farmyard scene. And then there's this image of the father used to come down the stairs and dance and sing in the morning, which is very nice. Brendan must come home one weekend and the father's coming in from the yard, so, you know, after his day's work, and there's probably a breezy, wild evening in Kerry. And he said, and over his right shoulder, a flock of starlings, like a fistful of dust cast in the breeze. I thought that was just perfect. And you can imagine, you can even feel that on your face if somebody, you know, throws a fistful of dust, or kids will throw sand at the beach or something like that, yeah. Yes, I can hear them.
So that sound in the background, which is, as you say, like a kettle boiling. Hmm. That's the starlings settling.
Starlings settle all around. They chatter away. Yeah,
they just chatter.
Chatter away, yeah. I don't know why that is. It's camaraderie, and, you know, as people would in a group or in a pub or whatever, you just chat to your friend. And, keeps the collective, you know, keeps the cohesion in the group and so on. That kind of thing, I'd imagine, yeah.
Kennelly wasn't the only poet to have been stirred by this aerial display. In his poem, A Ball of Starlings, Dermot Healy powerfully describes with intense clarity watching a murmuration of starlings, those shape makers in the sky.
As evening falls over the bulrushes, parties of starlings arrive in flurries to join the other shape makers at the alt. The swarm blows high, dives out of sight in a beautiful aside, till there's scarce a trace of a bird.
down through the wetlands. It's just a nicer way of, it's more natural for a walk, you know, of, you wouldn't know what we'd see.
This is Padraic Corcoran. His farm is right in the middle of Ireland, bordering Lough Ree in Roscommon.
And we're clambering through very soft ground here, up to our knees in reeds.
We have about 3 million Irish starlings who breed here every spring. But in the winter, they're joined by starlings from all over Europe. Estonia, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Belgium, Latvia, Poland, Finland. They all come here for our mild winters, and they spend their days in small groups searching for food before coming together in the evenings for their aerial performance.
Why do the starlings, why do they murmurate around here? What is it about this area?
They eat worms, they'll eat seed, you know, they'll scavenge on. They're scavengers, really, you know, they're good. For the last 2 weeks now, any farmer that has sheds and is feeding meal or the seed on the ground, because of the frost for the last few weeks, their feeding on the ground feeding, and that was very limited. So they tended to go into the farmer's sheds. They're a right nuisance, really, on that front, you know.
How many of them would go into a shed?
Oh, the thousands go in. Yeah. Yeah, they... But when they're hungry, you know, they're not afraid of people. Like, you know, they don't mind coming into the shed as long as they're getting fed.
Why do the starlings like reeds?
Because they're very sheltered. They're tall and they're dense, you know, so the cold doesn't go through them. And they're safe as well, you know, from a lot of the predators, you know. But the funny thing, we have the barn owls in the old house. One of their main diets that's on the barn owls here, they feed on the starlings. It's unbelievable, because if you look, you can see the house in the background, and like, it's only a couple of 100 meters. They can just drift out, pick whatever they want, and go again, you know. And the really good thing about it is, you know, they're not going to get caught with the rat poisons or anything like when they're on the, you know, on the rodents. So hopefully we'll get a proper flight.
They're gathering.
You can just see the way they come in and circle around.
Oh, look, here we go.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
They're all joining.
And look at the other group coming from the other side. Now they see. There's another bunch.
And they're about 20 feet in front of us.
Yeah.
We're right beside the reeds.
They're just gone straight in now.
They dropped down.
One thing that is certain about murmurations, and I say this from experience, is that, well, starlings don't always show up. If the weather is too cold, they'll often ditch the display in favour of flying straight into the reeds to roost. Ed Coulson is a sound recordist based in Ballygar in Galway. He put a microphone into a shallow water reed bed on the shores of Lough Carra, the renowned limestone lake south of Castlebar in Mayo, and he left it there to see what he could capture.
Blindingly bright, and certainly in the shallows it is frozen. The last actual sunbeam has just been snuffed out by a little corner of a cloud. So now we're into kind of bluey gold and purple. Colours of a winter painting. Still no starlings. My fingers and toes were going numb, and I was starting to think a little bit about, like, what on earth I was doing out here. What draws me to these starling displays? The spectacle of going to see these starlings. Like, that's the... that's like the big ticket show, isn't it? It's like... it's that feeling of being overwhelmed by the beauty of the world. And the way in which it's got absolutely nothing to do with humans. They're doing this, like, totally for themselves. It's kind of a relief as a human that we're not responsible for making all the world's big art performances. Like, even if no one ever put on another ballet or another choir performance or theatre show or exhibition or whatever, like, animals like the starlings, they'd still be painting pictures in the sky and making this kind of art and just telling us something important about the experience of life and what can be done when we, you know, move together. So I was having all of these thoughts, but there was no murmuration for me this time.
In ancient Rome, Roman diviners looked to the shapes and patterns of murmurations for signs of how the gods were feeling. This was called taking the auspices, literally looking at the birds to interpret the will of the gods. And the punishing will of gods was believed to be at play 400 years ago in Cork's capital when a dramatic, uncharacteristically bloody murmuration took place, the Battle of the Starlings. This murmuration was seen as a portent for the great fire that engulfed the city just a few months later. The story inspires and is vividly captured by Deira Ní Gcríofa in her poem At 11:30 in the Mutton Lane Inn, I am fire, slaughter, dead starlings.
Though this pub is crammed with laughter, I feel your stare. It burns. If you continue, I'll tell you of 1622, when a lightning cloud shadowed this city, flinging sparks on thatch that pulsed to flame. People stumbled over each other through narrow laneways, clutching children to their chests, weeping, afraid, while fire bloomed along the paths where they ran and fell and ran.
Starlings gather in the evening, huge flocks of little birds whooshing in over the river, the garden field, moving fast and collecting stragglers as they come. Patterns form, they wheel, fling themselves across the February sky in this clear light, under clouds marbled from white to grey. Sing. Sing and play as of this evening.
And the birds in the sky.
Shoals of birds rushing in over the bare ash trees, the low hills, and the bleached winter grass in stone-walled fields. Arriving from Kilbannon, Kilcleaventy, Galatlone, Ardlough, Killaloe.